On September 9th, 2020, the senior statesman of Virginia held a candidate forum for the two candidates for Virginia's 5th Congressional District. This recording begins with Jeff Gould, president of the Senior Statesman of Virginia.
Senior Statesman was founded 25 years ago as a not-for-profit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to bringing topics of importance to seniors throughout the Central Virginia area. Our programs are always free and open to the public. Our next program, also on Zoom, will be on voter registration and ranked voting, and is scheduled for October 14th, also at 1:30. You may register on our website, seniorstatesman.org. And while you're there, you may want to consider becoming an SSV member. It's easy, and it's only $20 annually. Today's forum will be recorded and available as a video at our website as early as tomorrow morning. One more thing. You may be interested to learn that you are one of 950-some folks who registered for today's program. It's my pleasure now to introduce today's moderator, Ms. Allison. Allison graduated from the University of Missouri. She has been a reporter with the Daily Progress for the last 5 years, covering the Albemarle County area. She lives in Charlottesville with her cat, Leo. Allison?
Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. Today, we're going to start the 5th District Forum. We have Mr. Bob Good, a Republican, who received his Bachelor of Science in Finance and his MBA in Leadership from Liberty University. He's married 31 years to Tracy Good and father to Patrick, Sydney, and Connor. He was a district manager for City Financial from 1988 to 2005. And a senior associate athletics director at Liberty University from 2005 until 2020, and a Flames Club executive director. Mr. Good is a member of the athletics department senior staff and a chief fundraiser for athletics. He's raised $18 million from nearly 4,000 donors. He served on the Campbell County Board of Supervisors from January 2016 to January 2020. He points to his proven record in Campbell County in areas of fighting for lower taxes, defending the Second Amendment, trimming government spending, fighting for the unborn, strong on immigration, and defending traditional values and supporting homeschoolers. We also have Dr. Cameron Webb, a Democrat who's a practicing physician, treating patients as general internists and teaching students and serving as the director of health policy and equity at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. His wife, Dr. Leanne Webb, is an ER doctor, and they reside in Albemarle County where they raise their two children, Avery and Lennox. After graduating from UVA and getting his medical and law degrees, Dr. Webb by President Barack Obama to serve on the White House health care team, and also worked on President Obama's My Brother's Keeper initiative, where he helped in education, workforce development, and criminal justice reform. Dr. Webb's priorities are COVID-19 recovery, health and health care, protecting the environment, education, affordable housing, jobs in the economy, women's equality, reforming criminal justice and infrastructure. And we're going to go over the format. A coin toss will decide who goes first with opening 15-minute statement. And are you both okay if we end up going over slightly by an over the hour slightly?
Sure.
Great.
Okay.
And then after the 15-minute statements, audience members will be able to send in the questions via the chat. Each candidate will have 3 minutes to answer, and the answering will rotate who starts first. I will be the timer. When you have 30 seconds left, you will hear a bell like that, and you will also see this level sign. And then when it is time to stop, I will ask you to stop, and you will see the red sign. And then you will have 3 minutes to close with your closing statements in reverse order of the opening statement, and this will last about an hour. So we will start with a coin toss, how these work, but if someone wants to call it in the air, we will do that. Ready?
I'll call heads.
It is tails. So I think, Dr. Webb, you called. So Mr. Good, it was tails. So you get to choose if you would like to go first or second.
I'll go second then. Let Dr. Webb go first.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. First and foremost, thank you to the Senior Statesman of Virginia for putting together this forum. Thank you, Allison, for being our moderator. And Mr. Good, it's great to actually share a screen with you. I know we've been engaging with each other, but haven't actually been in the same space. So it's great to be here with you today. It's exciting for everybody who's joining us. I see we've got 600 participants here on the call. This is an exciting moment because, you know, we've been in this race for some time now. We're getting down to the wire, and this is our first opportunity to appear before you and talk about not only our views and our values, but also our vision for this congressional district. So I'm excited to have that opportunity. And I think that in these first few minutes, if you'll indulge me, I want to use my time to talk to you, yes, about my views, values, and vision, but also to explain a little bit about how a kid from Central Virginia, from Spotsylvania County, decided to go on to become a doctor and lawyer, decided to go from there to work in both the Obama and Trump White Houses, and then came back home, came back to this part of the Commonwealth to be a physician and a professor before deciding to jump into politics. I promise you, the story does make some sense, and I have a couple minutes to explain exactly how that's the case. And so just to start, I'll begin by talking about where I'm from. And I'm from, like I said, Spotsylvania County is where I grew up. And I grew up in an amazing family. My mother, Brenda Webb, was a public school teacher, a speech therapist and a special education teacher, and has been for 30 years. My father worked for the Drug Enforcement Administration and did so for 20 years. He worked in law enforcement, and he not only helped with the hiring of officers, but also helped to make sure that they had proper training, both for the DEA and federally across the board. And with those two parents, they instilled a really strong sense of public service in their kids. You know, among my five brothers and sisters, because there are six of us total, among us, we went on to become educators and civil servants, nurse and a soon-to-be public interest lawyer. You know, for us, service was always front and center. And for me, I talk a lot about my siblings because being the third of six kids, you know, it has a real impact on you. I always tell folks that it's hard for me to walk into a room and believe that it's all about me. That's where my belief and my passion for consensus building comes from. It comes from the fact that growing up as a middle child, I was always bridging the perspectives of my siblings who are older and my siblings who are younger, and we all moved forward together. That was intuitive to me, and it made a lot of sense. But the other part about growing up in a family that size, it was that it introduced me to my passion because I described my parents' public service and my siblings' public service. But for me, it was the fact that we took so many visits to our primary care doctor, is the fact that we spent so much time with Dr. Timothy Yarbrough that I became passionate about healthcare. I decided at the age of five that I wanted to be a physician because I wanted to serve my community, listen to those values that my parents had instilled in me. But even beyond service, I became passionate about this idea of being a healer. You know, we grew up in a Christian family, and so beyond being a physician, we knew that there's something about being a healer. That's a calling. It's more than just a job. And that idea of being a part of my community as a healer, that was really exciting to me. And I knew that it meant more than just showing up at work every day. It meant having a real job, a real work to do in our community that can make a real difference. You know, I moved on and finished up in public school in Spotsylvania County before going to the University of Virginia for college. And I kept that with me. I knew that I wanted to be a doctor. I knew that I wanted to serve. But immediately when I got to college, I really learned about the incredible disparities, the incredible bad outcomes that we often have in our healthcare system. It taught me even more so that being a healer is more than just being a doctor, being a physician. It means that we're leaning into the issues that make our patients sick. And oftentimes, those issues that make them sick, they're issues related to education or housing or food insecurity, challenges with earning a decent wage or having good paying jobs. Those are the factors that really drive the outcomes in my patients. And I also saw that there was still some injustice in our healthcare system. And so for me, I became passionate about this idea of serving justice. That's the reason why I went on to go to law school as well. I said that I can bring that passion for healing with my scientific and clinical know-how, but also that passion for justice by understanding the law, spending time training in the law and in advocacy so I could work on behalf of the people that I aim to serve. And I did that for years. I did that all throughout my training. That idea of being a healer for me was what led me to start a free clinic when I was in medical school. It's what led me to go on to work in clinics, working on legal issues when I was in law school. It's led me to work in public housing when I was in my residency training. And it was that realization that health doesn't happen in hospitals or clinics. It happens everywhere that we live. It happens where we're born, grow, live, learn, eat, play, and pray. That's where health truly is born. And so for me, after I finished all of that training, I decided that I wanted to do something to serve my country in a different way. I applied for and was blessed to receive the White House Fellowship. And I was selected by President Obama, as you heard in the introduction, but it was in a transition year, which was exciting to me because I knew that I would span two administrations. I knew that the program I was a part of was a nonpartisan program, and I had an opportunity to see government up close and personal and serve in a real and meaningful way. And so when I started off, yes, I was on the White House healthcare team for President Obama. I was the only physician on that team in 2016 and was working on issues related to the Affordable Care Act and its implementation. Also worked on the opportunity agenda, President Obama's My Brother's Keeper initiative, that idea that everyone should have opportunities to succeed. And of course, we had an election in 2016, and I went on to serve also in the Trump administration. I had an opportunity to work in that administration. When we talk about why, because people often ask me, what is it that would make me the kind of individual who would serve in those two very different administrations? I go back to my roots. I go back to being a middle child and a consensus builder. I go back to talking about the idea that everyone should have opportunities to succeed, the idea that I'm a healer and I can bridge even the most challenging of circumstances. And in the Trump White House, I'll be clear, it wasn't always easy to make inroads because our politics are that broken. Just coming from one other administration, folks said, I don't really know who you are or if I trust you. But in those months that followed, I earned that trust. I was able to work on President Trump's healthcare policy team, working on prescription drug pricing when pharmaceutical companies came in trying to dictate what they were going to do to reduce drug prices. I worked closely, not only with President Bush's or with President Trump's team, but also with President Bush 43's team to make sure that we were bringing together the best minds, even the best conservative minds on health policy to bring down prescription drug prices. That was work that wasn't easy, but it was work that was necessary on behalf of the folks that I actually serve, which are the patients and the people who inhabit our communities. That idea of spanning administration taught me a lot. It taught me that it's not about bitter partisanship and that no matter what administration you're in, you have an opportunity to engage people on the issues that matter most. On healthcare, for instance, I can always connect with people by saying we all believe that people should have opportunities to get the care they need. On education, it was that we all believe that our kids should have the best education possible. On the economy, it's that we all agree that people should have opportunities to thrive in all communities across the United States of America. You can begin any conversation, no matter somebody's ideology, right there. And I learned how to do it in the highest levels of government, right there in the executive office of the president. But after serving in the White House, I did have the opportunity to come back home, back to Central Virginia, back to the University of Virginia, where I met my bride of now 11 years. And my wife, Leanne, she's from Appomattox County, grew up just an hour down the road from where we live now. My father-in-law is a pastor down there and on the school board. And it was exciting to come back home, to live in the neighborhood with my older sister, to be an hour from my parents who are still in Spotsy. But something was different when I came back to do the work this time around. What was different was the reality that we were no longer just talking about patient care in a traditional sense. Having worked at the highest levels of government, I saw my patients a little differently. When I had a young man who came in with cystic fibrosis, a genetic disorder that causes trouble for your lungs, and I saw him admitted after months of being well controlled, I knew that the reason he was actually coming in was because he couldn't afford the medication that was prescribed to him that's incredibly expensive. And I knew that even though we can do everything possible during the hospitalization, if we couldn't fix the price of his medication, then we couldn't keep him healthy. Or the time when I had a 63-year-old woman who was on my service and unfortunately passed away. And I was talking to her daughter, getting to know about the woman who was in my care, getting to know her more fully. Her daughter was telling me of a loving mother who had taken care of not only her kids, but her community as a whole. But as she described her and described her challenges with navigating our healthcare system, I realized this woman was robbed of 12 years of life expectancy just because of a healthcare system that didn't serve her well. These are the things that I see when I take care of my patients. And so while typically I would stay there and I would continue taking care of my patients in that same way that I was trained to do, the fact that I'm a consensus builder, the fact that I'm an advocate, It led me to say, hey, I should go upstream of these problems. Rather than catching sick people, I should be taking care of communities to make sure people have opportunities for health. And that's what I'm passionate about doing. That's what led me into politics. And we've got a unique moment to lean into where we can fix not only our healthcare system, but our society to create fair opportunities, no matter if you're in a rural county or an urban environment, no matter your race or ethnicity, your sexual orientation or gender identity, you should have opportunities to succeed in these United States. That's what the American dream is. That's what the vision is. And that's why I decided to run for Congress. And so as I come to a close, this manifests in the issue because I certainly am running as a member of the Democratic Party because I believe that my party is a big tent. It covers a lot of different perspectives, from progressive to moderate, centrist, even some conservative members of my party. And I believe that this district is very diverse. The 5th Congressional District is enormous. It's larger than the state of New Jersey. It has 21 counties and 2 cities, and there are different interests in every single one. And it's not going to be one single ideology or one single viewpoint that represents everybody. What's going to represent everybody is the ability to listen, to hear, and to act. It's going to be just like what I do as a doctor. I walk into rooms and I ask people where it hurts. I listen for an answer, and then we work together to find a solution. That's what this district really needs. And sometimes that's going to look a little more blue, and sometimes that's going to look a little more red, and sometimes it's going to be that purple in between that defines so many people in this district. But for me, I'm passionate about engaging with all of them. It's the reason why I do conservative podcasts and radio shows. It's the reason why I engage with Democrats. Even in my conversation, I lead with language of consensus building. I understand why you like this idea or that idea. I understand the merits of that concept, but let me tell you how we can move forward together. That's the work of being a healer. Now, I'm going to bring it to a close because I just want to wrap up with one thing. I'm new to politics. And right before we got started, I had those normal pregame jitters that you have. I played a lot of sports growing up. I had those pregame jitters. I was thinking about what I was going to say when I engaged with you. And exactly an hour ago, I got a call from my mother that my cousin was in the hospital with COVID. Now, this is a pandemic that has affected our communities all over the United States, and it's continuing to affect individuals. And my cousin, he's a couple years younger than me. But what I realized in that moment was, it's not about prepping for this debate. We have real work to do right now. And I called my cousin, and we talked about what would happen when he got that x-ray back. We talked about what medications could be helpful to him because I work on the coronavirus unit right here at the University of Virginia. We talked about what he can do if he's at home to stay safe and what he needed to do to keep his neighbors and friends safe. Immediately, my focus shifted from me focusing on preparing for this debate to the people that I'm accountable to. And I'll close by saying, I hope to have the opportunity to be accountable to you in the months and years ahead. I hope to have the opportunity to not only earn your vote, but earn your continued support and really show people that the 5th Congressional District is a district that's designed for folks to build unity, for folks to build consensus, for folks to work together. We're going to show not only the Commonwealth, but the entire United States who we really are. Again, I thank you all for coming out to join us this afternoon. I'm really looking forward to the questions and the conversations, and I yield the remainder of my time to Mr. Bob Good. You all take care.
Great. I didn't even have to use my bell. Mr. Bob Good, you can start now.
Well, great to be with all of you. Thanks for everybody who's participating. It's my understanding we've got almost 1,000 people. It's great to finally meet Dr. Webb here, at least by Zoom, and to be with all of you today. Just a little bit of background leading in. As our moderator said, I'm a graduate of Liberty University. I got a degree in finance and then followed that up with an MBA in leadership. Right out of college, I went to work for 17 years with Citigroup. I was a district manager in their lending division. And during that time, we helped people to get the funding they needed to take care of their families, to purchase things that they needed, to consolidate debt, or to otherwise improve their lives, or to help start a business, or to realize their dreams. That's what I did for 17 years at Citigroup. I left Citigroup to go back to my alma mater to work at Liberty University about 15 years ago. And I was one of the senior associate athletic directors helping to oversee the athletics program. I served as the executive director of the Flames Club, and my role was fundraising for athletics. And so I had the opportunity at my alma mater, where my wife and I met, where we went to school, to raise money to help provide scholarship opportunities for student athletes from all kinds of backgrounds, people like me who needed help going to college, who needed an opportunity, who needed a scholarship. But I was able to raise funds, again, nearly $20 million to help former student athletes like I was to go to college, get an outstanding education, and compete in the sport that they love. I did serve the last 4 years on the Board of Supervisors in Campbell County, and I fought for less government, lower taxes, for jobs and economic development. I fought to reduce essential spending and to prioritize law enforcement, public safety, and education. Backing up a little bit before that, though, from just kind of a growing up standpoint, I grew up in the Lynchburg area, moved there when I was 9 years old. There's four boys in our family, so I'm the second of four brothers, and we're all tight together in age range from 50 to 55, so all close together there. But we grew up in a lower income family. Our family really struggled for the essentials, but we were blessed by the benevolence of others. There were people the Lord put into our lives that were a blessing to us. I know what it's like growing up to have groceries left on the porch by another family that was trying to help out your family because they know that you needed it. I knew what it was like to get free lunch at school, to be in the lunch line with the free lunch voucher, if you will, and to know that what that feels like as a young kid. I know what it's like to get sent by your mother to walk a mile down the street to the grocery store because we didn't have a car, and to buy groceries with food stamps, and then to carry that grocery bag back to the home for the things that we needed that week. I've had to work for everything all of my life, as long as I can remember. And as we struggled for the essentials, and again, we certainly didn't have any of the extras. So I learned to work at a young age. And I think that's one of the most important things for a young person to do, is to learn to work, to learn the value of things. And that has shaped me all of my life. I attended public schools or city schools in elementary, but I was blessed to be able to attend a private Christian high school, again, due to the generosity of others. My family could never have afforded that, but due to the blessing of others, I was able to attend a private Christian school for high school. My brothers and I became wrestlers when I was in middle school, and I continued that through high school, and you know, I wanted to go to college, and my family wasn't going to be able to help me, but I was able to earn a partial wrestling scholarship to Liberty University, and the personal drive that I possess today was really influenced a lot by my wrestling experience. The discipline, the perseverance, tenacity, a delayed gratification, working towards a specific future goal, all those things were forged inside me through my wrestling experience and my work ethic. As I mentioned, I had to work my way through college, as my parents weren't able to help me in any way to get through college. I was kind of on my own. But together, these experiences formed my work ethic and shaped me into the person that I am today. These also developed within me the way that I grew up, again, in a lower income family and struggling as we did. It helped develop in me a real sense of compassion and a generous spirit to those who are less fortunate. I'm a born again Christian. I've been married to my wife, Tracy, for 32 years now. And as the moderator said, we do have three grown children, the youngest of which is a senior at Liberty University. The other two are graduates. You know, this is the most important election of our lifetime, and the stakes really couldn't be higher. The choice could not be more clear. My opponent is aligned with the radical socialist left that's become much of the Democrat Party. There's a reason why my opponent is endorsed by Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and the squad members. If he were elected, the first vote he would cast would be for Nancy Pelosi as speaker, unless there was a more leftist opponent that he would vote for, like an AOC type. If he were elected, he would do everything in his power to stop President Trump's agenda, or God forbid, to enact the Biden-Harris agenda if President Trump was not reelected. And make no mistake about it, my opponent would vote in lockstep with Nancy Pelosi, Jerry Nadler, Adam Schiff, and AOC. And he and I have a very different view for the future of America and for the direction of our country. I wholeheartedly support President Trump's America First policies, and I will work and vote accordingly as your representative. Some of my priorities in Congress that I'd like to tell you about. Number one, keeping the 5th District residents safe and protected from crime and violence. You know, I stand strong against the violence, the rioting, the lawlessness that we're seeing in our cities, and I'm committed to not letting it come here into the 5th District. We've been doing a lot of Back to Blue events. We're going to continue more of those because I stand strong with law enforcement. I believe in increasing, not decreasing, increasing funding for our law enforcement, our police officers, not reallocating or redirecting resources from the police. I actually support a law enforcement bill of rights, that something that we can put together that will provide greater protection, greater support for our law enforcement officers, more funding, making assault of a police officer a hate crime when someone attacks a police officer, providing automatic death penalty when someone kills a police officer, providing, again, more protections and more support for our law enforcement officers. I also will stand strong and protect our Second Amendment rights to defend ourselves. You know, if Biden-Harris were to win, Beto O'Rourke would be in charge of gun policy in D.C. My opponent wants to further restrict or wants to reduce funding for police. He has stated that multiple times in interviews. He wants to remove school resource officers, which he has stated also, and further strip our Second Amendment rights. And his allies in Richmond are working as we speak now to cut funding by 25% for police and to eliminate qualified immunity, the protections that police officers have when they're operating in good faith to do their jobs, the protection from being sued on a civil basis. There's a reason why I'm overwhelmingly supported by sheriffs and law enforcement officers in the district. Another priority for me is to continue to safely recover from the COVID shutdown. We've got to safely reopen our economy. There's no substitute for the American worker. There's no substitute for the American economy, and no government funding package can replace the American economy, the American worker. So we've got to safely continue to get Americans back to work, safely continue getting our kids back to a normal learning routine in school, which we know is so essential for them socially, for academically, for those who are on IEPs, for those who have special needs. We've got to get them back to school as quickly as possible in a safe manner. I also am prioritizing, I want to help renew and expand the Trump economy. I don't want to reverse and go backwards to the Obama-Biden economy, but I want to continue to support the free market capitalism versus what my opponent and his allies would do with more socialist policies. We need to preserve and expand the Trump tax cuts. Biden has already announced that he and my opponent would raise taxes by $4 trillion on 82% of Americans would experience a tax increase if Biden were elected. I want to preserve and continue the reduction of costly, burdensome regulations. The regulations our president has cut is now saving families $3,000 a year. And we need to continue those reductions in costly regulations. I want to continue to work to create jobs and support businesses and job creators, continue to bring manufacturing jobs back home here to America, and continue to lift millions of Americans out of poverty and off food stamps. Under President Trump, more than 5 million Americans have come off of food stamps. More than 2 million have come out of poverty, including 1.4 million children. So we want to continue that. I want to continue to work and protect the right to work protections that we enjoy here in Virginia versus mandated union and union membership and dues that my opponent would support. I want to maintain our energy independence. That's a national security issue and economic issue that's been brought by our president. We're enjoying historically low gas prices. You know, we were paying $4 a gallon back under the Obama-Biden administration. Now we're paying $2 a gallon. That has a direct impact on our families and our individual budgets, and we need to continue that. I reject my opponent's Green New Deal, the policy of the Democrat Party and Biden and Harris. That would eliminate 10 million jobs and cost trillions of dollars, radically increasing gas, oil, and utility prices, and drastically changing our lives. I'm going to protect and strengthen health care. We've got to continue to preserve pre-existing condition protections for everybody. I reject my opponent's call for single-payer health care, more government control of our health care. Think kind of Obamacare on steroids. I reject that and want to stay with market-driven solutions, improvements that are patient-centric, that will drive down costs and improve choice and quality for all Americans. I want to secure our borders, continue to do that, and continue to stop illegal immigration, build on the work that the president has done. This is an economic issue. It's a national security issue. It's a health care issue. We've got to finish the southern border wall. We've already built nearly 500 miles. It's expected to be completed by the time the election gets here. We want to enforce our laws, end sanctuary cities, fund our border patrol, not provide free social services such as health care and education to illegal residents at a time when we cannot afford that as a country. My opponent and his party have said that they will tear down the wall. They'll open the borders, defund border patrol, give citizenship and amnesty for 11 million illegal immigrants who are already here. I'm against that. I support school choice. and parental power in education, reduce federal control of our education system. I recognize that education should be a local and state issue and that parents should have more influence and more control. I support school choice, school vouchers, education savings accounts, charter schools, and supporting homeschool and private school parents who make those sacrifices to do that, believing that the dollar should follow the children. I want to invest more in broadband access for rural communities, unserved and underserved areas of the 5th District, to continue the work that I did in Campbell County, where we made progress on that issue. I support the president's $50 billion rural infrastructure plan that's already prioritizing broadband expansion. And I recognize that the public sector has to play a role in bridging the gap between the profit gap for private providers. Again, the public sector has to play a role to get the broadband that we need to our rural communities. Finally, you know, I want to protect our nation and our children's financial future by addressing our federal spending, addressing our national debt. That's an issue that we have to confront for the future of our nation, the future of our children. I'm running for Congress to serve you, the residents of the 5th District. I believe in the principles that have made America the greatest country in the world, and I'm going to preserve those foundational principles and work with our president to continue to make America great. I need your help. I ask for your support and ask for your vote. Thank you.
Dr. Webb, would you like a minute to respond to some of the comments that...
Absolutely. So, you know, I want to start as my opponent was reading his introduction. He did cover a lot of things that weren't actually included in my proposals, in my plans, or in my vision for the country. And so I want to start by acknowledging that regarding law enforcement, my opponent has had opportunities to increase police funding, but while he was on the Board of Supervisors in Campbell County, he cast the deciding vote to actually make sure that their salaries were not even competitive with the rest of the Commonwealth. And so he's had that opportunity. He hasn't taken it. He's shown his ability to lead and how it has not served his community well, and it's the reason why the sheriff, who was the sheriff of Campbell County while he was on the Board of Supervisors, is endorsing my campaign. You know, he mentioned some of my endorsements, and I'm proud that I'm endorsed by the entire span of the Democratic Party, moderates, centrists, and also progressives. It shows my ability to build consensus. It's the reason why I have members of the current Trump administration who still acknowledge all that I contributed and how they think I'm a pretty awesome guy, I think was the direct quote. And so I'm looking forward to the conversation ahead. I hope that we can go off script a little bit and really have a real conversation.
Thank you. And now for your first question, the 5th District encompasses different kinds of areas, from rural areas to small cities, and there can be a difference in ideology among those constituents. If elected, how, in any specific ways that you can talk about, will you bridge that gap? And Mr. Bob Good, you can go first.
Well, the 5th District is a massive district, and certainly learning it well, driving all over the district and meeting with literally thousands of folks over the past year. And while it's very different, we've got a couple of large colleges in the district in Charlottesville and Lynchburg area. We've got just the suburbs of D.C. up in Warrenton. We've got small rural communities throughout most of the district. But folks throughout the district want the same things. They want a better future for their children. They want to provide a better life for their children than what they had. They want good jobs. They want good paying jobs. They want economic opportunity. They want to be safe. They want to know that they're safe. And the number one role of government is to keep people safe. On the national level, that looks like a strong military, securing our borders, protecting us from foreign invasion. On the local level, again, critically, law enforcement, public safety are the number one role of government, and folks want to know that they're safe. If you're not safe, nothing else matters, and that's the number one priority that folks want. They want good education. They want choice for their kids. They want options. They want their kids to be prepared for life after school. They want quality health care. They want affordable health care. Studies show that 80% of Americans are actually happy with their employer-provided health care. So throughout the community, throughout the district, rather, we're finding that folks want the same things: good jobs, economic opportunity, a better future for their kids. They want to be safe. They want to be protected. They want to exercise their constitutional freedoms, to exercise their Second Amendment rights, their religious liberties, to worship as they choose or not to worship if they choose not to. And they also want, again, quality health care. They want affordable health care. So we're finding that throughout the district, folks want the same thing.
And Cameron, you may start answering.
Sure. My opponent, actually, he's traveled in the same district that I have over the last 13 months, and I agree. I think this is part of you being a consensus builder. Mr. Good, I don't disagree with you at all. People want a good paying job, want opportunity for success. Something we everywhere. And I worked on job training both in the Obama and the Trump White Houses. And I think working in that opportunity agenda from both sides of the aisle, you do see how that manifests, why we have some very blue areas and some red areas of this district, and why we can want the same things with regard to jobs. We all want a solid education for our kids. We certainly all want access to health care. That's the reason that Medicaid expansion that Mr. Good opposes by opposing the Affordable Care Act, you know, that is really serving people well, and they're grateful to have it. 740,000 Virginians have access to care when they didn't before. There are a lot of things that people are passionate about. I agree. They want safety and security as well. So I'm glad we're talking about the same issues. I think that we do look at it from a little bit of a different lens, because I remember that across this district, people do have different views and values. So we have to bridge those different views and values with meaningful conversation. I think that to start this conversation, it has to be coming from a place of leadership, coming from a place of experience. And I think that that experience, you know, for me, coming from the federal government, working in the White House in those two administrations, it helps a lot. But also working as a doctor here in the 5th District, taking care of patients, I really see up close and personal what that looks like. I will say there's a thread that ties all these issues, and it's rural broadband access. And that's one thing that I've had so many conversations about. I see you nodding your head. I agree with you again. So rural broadband is a critical issue, because it's the key to us having good paying jobs here in this district. It's the key to making sure that we have educational opportunities that span all of the different counties, all the different communities. It's the key to making sure that we have telehealth that delivers to rural hospitals and rural communities. And so I think that that's one of those issues where Republicans and Democrats alike, we see things the same way. We want to make sure that we can get that done. What it's going to take is the most skilled advocate being in Washington, advocating for those dollars from the USDA, from the FCC, making sure we can get those dollars right back here in the 5th Congressional District. You know, my in-laws who are in Appomattox County, when my kids are there with the grandparents, we can't FaceTime with them. There are still some challenges that we're facing. There are kids who go to McDonald's in Buckingham County or in Madison County just to get Wi-Fi before school. So we need to solve those critical infrastructure issues. But you know, I think this is why it's so important that we have leaders who can communicate with people all over. You left out an important college down in Prince Edward. So Longwood College is a really important one, and it's another part of this district that I think we're passionate about. We span so many different communities.
And we need Avery down in Danville, too.
We need so many people. We need to really bridge these gaps all over the district and make sure that we're uniting, not dividing, because we can solve these problems together.
What will both of you do if you're elected, to address environmental conditions and climate change if you were elected?
I think it would be Dr. Webb first this time.
Great. And you
can— Absolutely. Well, to start, I'll say that I don't support the Green New Deal, as my opponent has suggested. I think he's referring to a time that I retweeted about Virginia's Green New Deal when I was talking specifically about the equity and the justice elements. And that's something important. Anytime we're talking about the environment, we have to talk about justice. But for me, it's not that I don't support the Green New Deal. Instead, I support science. I think that, you know, I agree with our outgoing Congressman Denver Riggleman. We actually need bipartisan solutions on climate. This is an issue that affects us all here in the 5th Congressional District. If you love hunting, if you love fishing, if you love these beautiful, great outdoors, the environment may not be the same for our children and grandchildren. So we need to invest in that. The science is very clear. There's an intergovernmental panel on climate change that tells us that we need to move forward with reducing our carbon emissions. We have to hit certain goals by 2030 and 2050. These aren't lofty goals. It's just the science telling us we need to get this done if we want to preserve our environment. But I want to be clear. Addressing our climate crisis is not about taking jobs away, as my opponent suggests. Instead, it's about creating opportunities for jobs. And here in the 5th District, we have hubs in the clean and renewable energy space. In Charlottesville, certainly, down in Lynchburg with BWXT, we have great efforts around clean and renewable energy. And I love how my opponent talks about energy independence. You're right, Mr. Good. Again, I'm a consensus builder. I'll tell you when you're right. You're right about energy independence. I think the path to it is through clean and renewable energy sources. And the reason I say that is because that's what the free market tells us. The free market tells us that the cost of clean and renewable energy sources is lower than the cost of fossil fuels. And if we're not supporting, you know, what special interests are telling us to support and propping up fossil fuels, then hey, now is the time for us to lean into what the free market is telling us and invest in clean and renewable energy sources and create the jobs that come with it right here in the 5th Congressional District. It's critical work for us. And when I talk about environmental justice, which again is what I was referring to when I acknowledged, not endorsed, the Green New Deal, because again, in consensus building, you acknowledge the good ideas that people have, but at the same time, you acknowledge the counters to those arguments. But on that subject of environmental justice, it's so important to note what happened with the Atlantic Coast Pipeline and why it was stopped. It was consensus building right here in the 5th District. It was the fact that in Buckingham County, in Union Hill, there was a compressor station that was going to be placed, and that was really impeding on the individual rights of a community, a historic African-American community, and the Friends of Buckingham and the people of that community in Union Hill stood up against it. It's that in Nelson County, those libertarians, those strong Congressman Riggleman supporters, they saw their property rights were being impeded upon, and they said, that's not right either. And those strange bedfellows came together and they stopped that pipeline coming through our district and created an opportunity for us to have the necessary conversation about what's next. We can work together and solve the biggest problems in front of us and create jobs while we're at it. And again, I think we can do that without a Green New Deal. We can do it with common sense and with science.
Well, I would say what we agree on is that we all want clean energy. We all want clean air. We all want clean water. But the president's energy policies are critical for us. How we have achieved energy independence, where we know, and you can't separate energy policy from climate environmental policy, and how we have achieved energy independence, where we no longer depend on foreign hostile nations for essential energy. And that is critical from an economic standpoint as well as a national security standpoint. And my opponent has endorsed the policies of the radical left on this issue. The Bernie Sanders policy, Bernie Sanders has endorsed my opponent for a reason. Bernie's policy, and Elizabeth Warren has endorsed my opponent as well. The Democrat policies, the Green New Deal, and we know if Biden wins, if my opponent wins and they're in there together, they're going to vote in lockstep together to enact radical, drastic changes to our energy, environmental, climate policy. It's estimated the Green New Deal or its policies would cost 10 million jobs and $93 trillion. $93 trillion. Think about that. Our national debt now is $27 trillion. Our annual budget is only $3 to $4 trillion. $93 trillion, 10 million jobs, and radically increase utility crisis, gas prices. And my opponent has advocated for the emission standards or the Paris-Climate Accord. And it's estimated that what we had in the peak of the shutdown, during the peak of the shutdown from the COVID shutdown, the 2 months of the strongest shutdown, March and April, where you stopped all manufacturing, you stopped all air travel, you stopped basically purchasing gasoline and almost all vehicle travel because we shut down the economy. You would have to do that for 10 years consecutive to get to the emission standards required by the Paris Climate Accord, which was what my opponent and the Democrats in Congress, if they get power, if Biden and Harris get power, again, Kamala Harris endorsing my opponent for a reason also, these radical, drastic environmental policy changes that would change our lives, drastically increase energy prices, surrender our energy independence. You know, I'm an all the above guy. We want to harvest all of our natural resources, harvest all of our energy resources. But even in my time in Campbell County, I voted and supported, solar farms and to bring solar energy into our county. I was a leader on that in Campbell County in terms of doing this. I'm an all of the above strategy, develop energy sources from renewables, but we also want to harvest our fossil fuels resources, and we don't want to handicap ourselves with drastic, radical environmental policy. The Biden-Harris administration, again, which Harris endorsed from my opponent, has said AOC will be in charge of environmental, climate, energy policy in the White House. And my opponent, if he's elected, will vote in lockstep with AOC.
Next question. Which specific actions are you going to take to get broadband to the 5th District?
Is that to me first this time? Or?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm proud of my record on that in Campbell County. During my 4 years in Campbell County, I helped one of the neighborhoods. It was a more affluent neighborhood, where the individuals had the ability to come together. We helped them to come together with a private provider to bring broadband to their neighborhood where they didn't have. It was a more rural neighborhood where we brought these number of homes together, these number of neighbors together to get rural broadband expanded into their area of the county where it was not served previously. you know, while I'm a limited government guy and I'm a low spending guy, or a low taxes guy and a low spending guy during my time in Campbell, and I certainly would be that way on the federal level, a deficit hawk, if you will, there's things that only government can do and that government should do. And investing in rural infrastructure, investing in infrastructure generally, is one of those. It's kind of like the post office. The reason why we need a U.S. post office is because there wouldn't be the sufficient profit incentive to deliver mail for 55 cents for an envelope to the most remote rural areas in the country for a for-profit company. So we need a public option there, a public provision of mail service in those areas. We need the same thing from a broadband standpoint. Broadband, and the pandemic has illustrated how important the need for broadband is. It's important for telemedicine. You know, as doctors have been able to see more patients and people have had, you know, less expensive access and less intrusive access to doctors through telemedicine, it's important for learning. We know that all families don't have access to the broadband they need for their kids to learn from home. It's essential for commerce in today's world. It's for connectivity, for business, for young people to have the option of staying in their home communities, the rural communities, because they have that broadband connectivity. So we know it's essential. So I was part of voting and working to bring that into Campbell County at large, to take steps towards bridging the gap between, again, the profit incentive that a private company does need in order to make it work, and the public sector partnering with them, playing a role in bringing that. So we moved the ball forward in Campbell County. They're continuing to work on that since I've rotated off the board back in January. And so I think that we need to support what the president has done. Again, his $50 billion rural infrastructure program prioritizes broadband. It prioritizes dollars to the governors for them to use that without mandates exactly how they have to use it, but allowing them to use that for broadband. I'm pleased that I think that's a priority here in Virginia in our state leadership. It would also be a priority for me on the federal level.
Great. Dr. Webb, can you start, please?
Well, I think my opponent gave a great answer for what he would do if he had another term on the Campbell County Board of Supervisors. In the United States Congress, we have a little bit of a different role with broadband. So the USDA, as I mentioned, just to answer your question, USDA has the ReConnect program. It's responsible for bringing millions, actually billions of dollars of rural internet into spaces, and that's going to be so important for us. It's something that our outgoing Congressman, Denver Riggleman, has worked in a bipartisan way to help accomplish here in Virginia's 5th District and to help accomplish here across the Commonwealth. Also, in the United States government, again, that's what we're running for. The FCC also has some funding for broadband. And again, our work is to make sure we're getting those dollars here. The concept is that last mile, because that infrastructure, yes, it runs through our communities to some extent. But, you know, I think the key here is making sure that public-private partnership is achieving that last mile. My opponent did outline some of those issues. I've talked about them as well. COVID has shown us that you know, yes, in education, we have huge differences in folks' access to virtual learning based on broadband. As a physician, my partners, and I'm on the primary care task force here in Virginia, we've seen the challenges with telemedicine because we can't reach all of our rural spaces. And then job creation, as I mentioned, that's a really important one. But Congress has another role. Again, we're running for Congress. Congress has another role here. That's the convening power. What Minnesota has done in terms of rural broadband, in terms of connecting communities to broadband, that's key for us to learn from. So using that convening power of the United States Congress to really learn best practices, that clearinghouse, if you will, and make sure we're propagating those right here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Virginia does have its technology initiative, and so we can make sure that we're getting dollars right back here. Commonwealth Connect 2.0, that's a huge program. It's doing some good things, but we still have some work to do in counties like Appomattox, where my wife is from. And so, you know, I think you have to be prepared for the job that you're applying for. This job is talking about what the federal government can do on the broadband front, and I think that that's what I'm prepared to do. I do want to address some misinformation. I don't mean to fact check all the time, Mr. Good, but I have not been endorsed by Bernie Sanders, unless you know something that my campaign doesn't know. You may be thinking of Senator Amy Klobuchar, one of the more moderate members of the United States Senate, who has endorsed my campaign. And again, we have support from across the range of members of the Democratic Party, and also some independents, folks like I said, the sheriff from your county from during your time there. So some of your friends on the conservative side are supporting me as well. You know, I think it's so important that when we're having these conversations, we're staying factual, we're staying accurate. And so I just wanted to correct that record a little bit. And also my opponent has kind of suggested that he knows how I'm going to vote when I get to Congress. I don't know how prescient you are about how I'm going to vote, but I think that my vote is always going to be with the people of the 5th District, not necessarily along party lines. I showed that when I was walking out of the Trump White House every day to a group of protesters and still kept coming back for more, because I'm here for the people, not for the party. And I hope you do the same.
Thank Thank you both for answering that question. And can you please each discuss your views on healthcare? Dr. Cameron Webb, please start.
Of course I get healthcare first. So first I want to say very clearly, I do not support Medicare for all. I've never suggested that I support Medicare for all. Again, what my opponent has done is he lifted a single quote out of context and used it to ignore the mountain of articles and interviews I've done where I say I support a public option and free market solutions as well. What I support is the idea of those 30 million Americans who don't have access to care, making sure they have an option. But as a physician, I see every day how critical the private insurance space is, how critical private innovation in healthcare is to delivering the care that my patients need. So I would never say that, hey, we need to get rid of that right now. That's just that typical Washington politics that you hear, folks trying to distort a record and use it to their political advantage. What I actually believe, and I'll say it here so Mr. Good can stop spreading misinformation, I support a public option, I support maintaining private insurance, and I support using that to accomplish the goal of everybody being covered. You know, for me, the most important thing is we have a healthcare system that works for the patients that I'm taking care of. Now, along those lines, it's so important that beyond just access to insurance, we have access to care in rural spaces. So we're funding our rural hospitals adequately. We're making sure they have the dollars they need. We already mentioned telemedicine. That's a critical role. We need more mental health access. And that's a part of our conversation about the risk of folks being a harm to themselves. But we need more mental health access in this district. We need more access to long-term care. And I mentioned that I worked on healthcare policy both in the Obama and the Trump White Houses. I have had deep conversations with folks on both sides of the aisle. I know where to start the conversation. I know how to lead. You don't lead on this issue by going as far to the left or by going as far to the right as you can go. You lead with patients first. That's the whole reason why I'm in this race, is I'm passionate about my patients. I want to make sure they have access to the care that they need. When I talk to my colleagues in healthcare, we're not advocating wholesale for a single-payer system, but that doesn't change the fact that some Americans like the idea. Mr. Good, here's how it works. If you want to listen to all of the residents of your district, you do have to hear folks who are advocating for Medicare for all, but also hear folks who are advocating for repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act like you're doing. Now, that repeal and replace movement has ended, and so you're a little bit behind your party on that one. Instead, Republicans are focused on other free market solutions. I agree with President Trump that we should have more price transparency in healthcare. I agree with President Trump that we should work to bring down the cost of prescription drugs. In fact, I helped him on it. So for me, it's about making sure that we're doing this the right way and we're leveraging the free market to bring the innovation and the choice that it brings. But at the same time, we have that heart that President Trump called for in reform. He said, let's make sure that reform has some heart. I think that your suggestions are lacking a little bit of that heart, because by repealing and replacing, or by repealing the Affordable Care Act, again, hundreds of thousands of Virginians lose their insurance. The pre-existing conditions, I want to be clear, because I teach a class on health policy at UVA, so this one's for free. You don't even have to pay tuition. The reality is you can't keep pre-existing conditions without keeping some of the other insurance market reforms. So we can do this, but we have to do it in a smart way. President Trump knows that, and I know that.
Well, my opponent, he's endorsed by the Elizabeth Warrens, the Kamala Harrises of the world, the squad members, and my opponent embraces all the elements of the radical left on healthcare, they want single-payer healthcare, they want the government public option on healthcare, which is going to bankrupt employer-provided healthcare. Studies show that most Americans like their healthcare, they like their options, they want to keep their options. My opponent likes to take credit for being part of Obamacare, helping to write Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Well, that was a lie. It was a lie. Remember, they told us that it was going to drive down prices? That didn't happen. It was going to improve quality? That didn't happen. It was going to improve options? That didn't happen. You can like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. That was a lie. If you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan. I am in favor of market-driven, patient-centric reforms that protect employer-provided health care, that doesn't bankrupt employer-provided health care or make it impossible for employer-provided health care to compete with federal-provided health care, which is what my opponent advocates for. We have to continue to protect pre-existing conditions. That's a misnomer. I don't know anybody that's not in favor of keeping pre-existing condition protections. Certainly, I've never said that. But we want to reduce regulations, permit all providers to do what they're trained to do at lower costs. There's rules or laws are in place that prevent people, providers, from doing what they're trained to do. There's things that pharmacists can do or nurse practitioners or physician assistants or midwives that they're not allowed to do based on the law. We want to create more competition. Competition is always a good thing. It provides more choice. It provides lower pricing. And that forces improvement when you have competition. We need to permit self-employed individuals and small businesses the ability to pool together and negotiate better plans at lower prices like the large employers do. I was very disappointed right here in Virginia just a couple of months ago. Our governor beat another doctor who we know what happens with a doctor in charge of government here. Our governor here in Virginia, who's in charge of healthcare in a sense, he vetoed a bill that would have allowed self-employed folks and small businesses to pool together and compete for the pricing and the kind of plans that large employers get. And he vetoed it. And he said their justification for the veto was because we needed to protect Obamacare. We need greater transparency and upfront pricing and cost disclosure. You know, we go to the doctor, we go to a medical facility, and we don't know what it's going to cost us until we get the bill, sometimes, you know, weeks and months later. We need to eliminate surprise billing. We need to end the suppression of free market healthcare services that's by the large monopolistic providers. You know, we have these certificate of public need laws here in Virginia and other states, but in Virginia, you know, we're concerned about right here, but across the nation as well in many states that give these large providers veto power over competition. And it keeps lower cost providers from coming in and offering specific services at a lower cost. We need to ensure portability and permit companies to service customers across state lines. We need to permit health savings accounts for everybody and not just those with the high deductible plans. Again, I mentioned telemedicine with the broadband. That's something that we learned about during the pandemic on how that can help people, allow doctors to see more patients in a more cost-effective manner.
Mr. Good, your time is up there.
Thank you. We are at the near the end of the forum today. If we could go to closing statements, you each have Mr. Good, you will be starting us off for the closing statement.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for everyone for making time today. It's terrific that we've got this much interest to have almost 1,000 people here. I appreciate Dr. Webb being here. I appreciate our moderators. It's a great first opportunity for us to be together. And you've caught a glimpse today on the differences between me and my opponent and our differing views for the future of America and the future of the 5th District. Make no mistake about it, and don't be fooled by the bipartisan moderate rhetoric all of a sudden. If my opponent was elected, he would do like all the other Democrats in Congress, and he would work to undo everything that President Trump has done and work to either stop President Trump's second-term agenda or, God forbid, advance the agenda of the Biden-Harris regime if they were elected. He would vote in lockstep with Nancy Pelosi, Jerry Nadler, Adam Schiff, AOC. You know, he doesn't point out where he disagrees with those folks. The Democrats vote in lockstep to advance Nancy Pelosi's agenda, and he would do the same thing. You know, don't be fooled by him and Joe Biden's recent recognition that the majority of Americans and those in the 5th District reject the violence, the looting, the rioting in our cities, and stand behind our law enforcement. And they reject calls to defund. You know, what he said in an interview with WSET just like 2 weeks ago was, well, funding police could look like reallocating towards education. It could look like reallocating towards housing. And then another quote in June with CBS 19, he said that, that we've got one of the big problems is overfunding of police. That's the problem. We're overfunding police. So if we're overfunding or we want to reallocate, those are quotes that he made to TV stations. That is another word for defunding. Again, there's a reason why he's endorsed by Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, squad members. You know, from Thomas Jefferson to James Madison to James Monroe, this 5th district is one of the most historic districts in the country in terms of the impact that it had on our nation's founding 244 years ago, and even its rebirth in Appomattox as we came back together as a nation 155 years ago. Like you, I love America and everything that it stands for and everything about how it was founded. I love what makes our country unique and exceptional among the nations of the world, and I'm going to preserve those things. As your congressman, I'll work to keep you safe, to support our police, to stand up against the violence in our cities. I'll work to safely reopen our country, get folks back to work, safely get our kids back to school. I'll work to renew and expand the Trump economy, the pro-job policies that gave us the greatest economy we've had in our lifetime. I'll work to maintain our energy independence as an economic and national security issue. I'll work to protect and strengthen our health care, preserve pre-existing condition protections, and enact market-driven, patient-centric solutions. I'll work to finish securing our southern border and end illegal immigration. I'll work to support school choice, to put parents in charge of their education, to reduce Washington mandates and federal control over education system. I'll work to expand broadband access throughout our communities, our rural communities, to protect our nation's and our children's financial future by addressing our deficit and our spending. I ask you to stand with me today to continue moving forward with our America First agenda and to make America even greater and stronger than it is today. I ask for your support. I ask for your vote. Thank you, and God bless you.
Good. Thank you. Dr. Webb.
So I've really enjoyed spending this hour with you all and sharing my actual views and my vision. And I know you've heard some different versions of what I believe from my opponent, but I want to be crystal clear with you. It's not an act. My passion for consensus building, like I told you, comes from how I grew up. My passion for finding bipartisan solutions comes from working at the highest levels of government in two very different administrations. That experience has taught me that it's possible to build consensus. That's not a naive thing. Our career civil servants in Washington, they see that all the time. Some have spanned four presidencies, five presidencies, and they know that we have more in common as Americans than we have opposed. I don't view Mr. Good as an enemy combatant. I view him as loyal opposition. I think that we have an opportunity to hear from each other and to work together. And so, yes, I'm proud that I've been able to listen to people with a range of views across this district. I want to be clear. I support both a public option and free market solutions in healthcare. I support not defunding the police, but funding the police appropriately. Here in the 5th District, we don't have a problem with overfunding our police. And that's the reason why sheriffs across this district have endorsed my campaign. Even those two from Campbell County, Mr. Good, who know you very well, and they think that I'll be better on supporting police than you are. You've asked to get rid of police unions, ruin their ability to advocate for themselves. Listen, the district is very diverse. It's very broad. The views range all across the political spectrum. But what we need is somebody who can listen and who can engage. Someone who's authentic. Somebody who's not reading their talking points, but who knows them in their heart. Because at the end of the day, what this campaign is about, it's about lifting voices all across this district, hearing people who don't look like you or didn't grow up where you grew up or haven't had the same life experiences, but you know they matter so much. And you know it's important for you to support them every single day. And so I'm really grateful to have this opportunity to engage with you all. I'm passionate about making sure we get our economy going again. I think that we have to do it in a safe way. We haven't had a chance to talk about COVID today, but we can make it through this, and we can do it if we stay safe. So Dr. Webb is telling you right now, wear your mask, keep your physical distance. Mr. Good, wear a mask when you're out in public. Take care of the people of the 5th right now. That's a good way to do it. But I think that at the end of the day, it's so important for us to make sure that we get through this safely. Get through this the right way, and have opportunities very soon. My two kids, they're working, they're doing school virtually. I can't wait to get them back in school. So many people have lost their jobs, lost their livelihoods. We need to get that back. We need to get that going. We need to invest in this economy. There are some good things about President Trump's economy. There were some good ideas that Congressman Riggleman was supporting. He had the right idea when he talked about bipartisan solutions. And while my opponent has said that he would never work with Democrats, he disagrees with them on everything, you can't have that temperament in the United States Congress. If you want to get things done, rather than just stand where you are shouting, you've got to talk to other people who see things differently than you. I'm grateful for you all for engaging with me this afternoon. I look forward to more opportunities, Mr. Good. I can't wait to have another opportunity to debate with you. Hopefully we can find one soon. And I'm looking forward to conversations to come. Thank you. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you both for being here today. Jeff Gold is going to lead us in closing today.
Yes, I'd like to thank Mr. Good, Dr. Webb, for your time today and for your commitment to serve. Thank you, Allison, for doing a fantastic job today as our moderator. And I'd also like to acknowledge the countless hours of hard work put in by the various board members of SSV to make this possible today. And finally, to all of you who tuned in, almost 1,000 people, thank you for your time. We hope to see many of you at our next meeting on October the 14th. Stay tuned and stay involved. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Take care.
Thank you, everybody.